This is Melissa on the 19th of April, 2026. And I'm excited, truly excited, to let you know that the books will be ready tomorrow or Tuesday. I spoke with the printer Friday, and he said they were binding them, and they'd probably still be binding tomorrow morning, Monday morning. So I expect I'll be driving up to get them tomorrow afternoon or Tuesday. And I look forward to being able to offer these to you because they're just beautiful. I will speak with Derek and Ula Chamberlain. The artist Ula conceived this idea of finding the same images but better quality. And Derek has contributed original artwork. You'll see. They're beautiful. He did the cover as well. So we'll make a real history for you next week and talk about the book and share a few images of it. I also want to thank Jeremy for big support this week. I appreciate it. It's very helpful. And it's kind of been my life's work for so long, going on 20 years now. And it's all I do. It's all I think about, really. I'm a little unbalanced, I guess you could say. So I appreciate your support. Thank you, all of you. And that's about all I want to say about it today. You know I've said it often enough, so you know how to support me if you are able to. I chose a redux today that I had not listened to in a long, long time. And I'll have to say that this is going to be up there as a big favorite of mine. It'll be right up there with Sing Your Song and Steal Some Time. This is from 2007, July 12, Sorcery's Circle and the End of an Age. And it's so personal. There's so much about it that I know to be personal to Alan. And it strikes a personal chord with me. And it's just a beautiful meditation on the end of an age and where we find ourselves. And I'll just read a bit, but you know, you're going to hear it soon enough. But right at the top, he said, "Sometimes when you're a one-man band, you have to reflect back to where you plan to take things within your own life, which affects the lives of other people. It's so easy today in this present phase of massive change, very quick progression along this pre-planned route." So he talks about how our time is taken over, our minds are taken over, and with trivia, chatter. So he said, if you're a one-man band, and that's Alan, and yes, he did have help even then at that point, and me, I'm a one-woman band, but And I am appreciative of those who help me. But still, there's so much deep thought and focus that goes into deciding what matters, how I'm going to spend my time, what it is that I want to achieve. Alan has been gone now for over 5 years, and I stop every once in a blue moon to reflect on what I've been able to accomplish. And I know that on the one hand, it's a lot, but on the other, there's so much more that I want to accomplish, and my time here, as for any mortal, is limited. And I'll let you know that, you know, to a couple of close friends, as soon as the books were officially being printed, I said, okay, I'm ready for the next project. And of course, I know what the next project is, and I am working on it. I'm not ready to announce it yet, but it's big, and it'll probably take about a year to get done. And this is how it is for me. It's my time here, and how am I going to use it? And Alan said, you plan where you're going to take things in your own life and how it affects the lives of other people. And so I know that Alan had a huge effect on many, many people. And as I've said, I want to share the benefit of my time with him, but also my energy and creativity and my thinking and all of that to use it in the best possible way that I can, which are my projects that I am so blessed and fortunate that many of you have participated in these projects. And so I thank you all. So, yes, it's a wonderful redux, personal to Alan and personal to me. And I don't want to weigh it down with a lot of trivia and a lot of chatter that you're getting in the media. But I do want to say a couple of things. I received a message from someone just the other day, a couple of days ago. And he said, I was listening to a recent show in which you stated that someone was making money from this, quote, war. And I would like to point out the weekly pump and dump of oil stocks happening. Trump comes out saying negotiations are going well, which brings confidence and people buy. But a few days later, he says negotiations are off and everyone's going to die and they sell. It's blatant insider trading. Trump and friends buy options for the up and down market. His words produce. Shooting fish in a barrel. And I thanked him for sending that. I said, yes, I'm definitely going to talk about it. You know, I'm have occasion to talk to people who are just so gung-ho for what's going on that, you know, believe the propaganda just as it's given to them and believe that we have every reason, we Americans have every reason to be doing what we're doing. And it's appalling. It is appalling. And he carried on in his second message to me. He said, yeah, the MAGA retards are still on board even when so much criminality is staring them in the face, market manipulation, and they ignore child rape. Child rape. One thing after another. So, yes, this is where we are, and it's the end of an age. And that is what Alan is talking about. Now, the end of an age can be a long time, decades, decades. But we are there. And it's tempting, maybe tempting is not the right word, but compelling. One can get pulled along, like with a strong body of water, and oh, you're just going along with the idea that you need to keep up on what's going on with Ukraine and Russia and the Middle East and the Epstein. You know, you've got to keep up. And I fight against that. I fight against the stream. Like, I go upstream. I swim against. Because I know it's just technique that is being used on me. and it dissipates that energy that I need to do the things that I think are important. It's out in front of us, though, if we care to look, this market manipulation. One headline I saw said, okay, the Strait of Hormuz is open, but gas prices will be slow in going down. Oil prices will be slow in going down. Well, of course they will. Of course they will. The Strait of Hormuz is open, and it's looking good. And we see an end to this. There's also news that the U.S. is sending thousands more troops to the Middle East, and this is despite the ceasefire. Thousands. 6,000 troops on board the USS George H.W. Bush. And the Pentagon seeks help from Ford and GM, concerned about the slow pace and high cost of weapons production. Pentagon officials have begun talks with General Motors and Ford Motor about producing certain parts. So, it's rah-rah. They've had to do this. Oh, they did it during World War II. During World War II, the U.S. government asked car companies based in and around Detroit to produce weapons. Okay, so there's a precedent. So this is where we are. In quite a few talks over the years, Alan told us about what the end of an age was like, the things that people would cling to, the beliefs from their childhood that they would go back to. And I kind of keep an eye on or an ear open for what people are talking about, just to see where people's heads are at, just to see, also because I want to try to reach people who may yet be reachable. And so what other voices and thoughts are they taking in? Is there a possibility that they will hear me or they will hear Alan? So I look around, and a big one is a new kind of positive thinking. It's a new kind of optimism. And it really is a lot of New Age thinking blended in with Christianity. That's one brand of it. I'm sure it's blended in with other religions as well. But I see, I was reading today a headline that said, or a YouTube title, it said, Jesus warned us about the Archons and their louche farm system. And there's so much of this, we can't have negativity. We're only helping the dark side. And some of this kind of messaging will come from the same people who will tell you that what Trump is doing in the Middle East is a good thing. And they love that image of him as, Jesus that he said was the doctor. They love that. And it's negative. It's bad louche for me to say otherwise. There was a book that Alan and I read from 2010, and he mentioned it a few times to you, called Bright Sided by a writer who's now deceased named Barbara Ehrenreich. And it was about the toxic positivity of American culture. And it's a quick read and an excellent book. And if you happen to find a used copy of it, I say go for it, read it. But this is such an important part of the, I guess you could call it a dialectic. It may be unique to America, but I'm seeing that it is kind of a worldwide phenomenon, but with different nuances, different colors to it. But on the one side is that we just sit back and wait because this was prophesied. And the other side of it says that we must, you know, actively engage in positivity, positive thinking. You know, it's really, it almost in a way, it's like the Christian version of vibrating higher. Alan says in this talk that we want everything in a hurry, quick, easy, and spelled out. And I mentioned recently that there was a talk, I think I may have even shared which talk it came from, but there was a talk where Alan had said that there was a separation taking place. And so I was looking, I knew which talk he said that in, but I was looking for other talks in which he brought up the same themes. And as it turned out, he said this quite a few times. There's a separation taking place between people who care enough to get up and do something or say something, or most importantly, because this is where it starts, making the changes in our own life. And he said, a separation taking place. So this mention that I've quoted before is in a blurb of his called Tinkering in the Matrix of the Womb. And he said, this is a telling period for humanity because there's a separation taking place. This separation has been talked about in previous ages, as it's called, where society gets to such a stage of corruption from the top to the bottom that something happens, either man-made or whatever, and most people are wiped out. Others have taken some sort of moral stance concerning the story, and there's a change in certain humans themselves. There are certain humans alive who are different from the rest, and these ones come through, whereas those who are still base do not. Now, this isn't... He's not equivocating there. It's not, maybe they come through. In another talk of his that I found, he used that idea in the title poem. And this was RBN, May 23, 2008. The mass man moves toward integration, the few with spirit toward separation. These are the times when your next of kin will take offense and turn you in. So, I know I have gotten the message. I have heard that some people don't really like it when I hammer on with some of the things that Alan himself said or wrote. I think they're not ready to hear it. They don't want to hear it. They don't like it. They don't agree with it. And so, you know, I'm just like, sorry, but that's what I do. I hammer on the issues, the topics, the themes, especially coming from Alan, that I think are important. That talk from RBN, he closed by saying, someone had called, and he thanked them for calling. And then he said, because it was the end of the show, so be careful out there. This is a time of separation in many, many ways. And we've got to look after ourselves, too, to continue. So that theme is so important. how do you separate? And we've started in the CTTM book club into Carl Jung's The Undiscovered Self. And it really is, it's a book that Alan read from several times, but it is a helpful little book as a reminder that there is a mass and we want to be separated, not just on the fringes or dipping in and out, but separate from the mass. And we don't want to go back into the mass, because that's always a danger. So the book club, we've really officially, I guess you could say, made a separation from the way we were doing it before on Telegram. There were several people who suggested that they wanted to do it as a Zoom call, wanted to have face-to-face interaction. And it has been quite successful. I think that the list of the people who are on the Zoom call list numbers 56 people now. And we haven't had, I think our top was about 28 on one call, but we are averaging in the mid-20s on the call. And it's, it's okay. I've heard from people who said, oh, I missed the first chapter. I missed the first three sessions. Can I still come in? And yes, you absolutely can. Each chapter is just a few pages, and so it would be easy for you to get up to speed. I know that there are copies of the book online and audiobooks as well, if you like that. So you can participate, and you should get in touch with me if you're interested. But the combination of the Zoom call and Substack, to my mind, with I'm always in that process, I guess you could call it an ongoing process of asking the question that Alan said right at the top of this redux. Sometimes when you're a one-man band, you have to reflect back to where you plan to take things within your own life, which affects the lives of other people. And so I'm always looking at what it is that I'm doing and what I want to accomplish in my short time on Earth. And I don't love social media. I can say that. I've never had a Facebook, and dipping my toes into the waters of social media has been mostly, I've just used it to do the kinds of things, uploading the kinds of things that I do on all of the other channels and sites. And I think that social media in that form with a large group of people really only works if you have several dedicated administrators or moderators going, and I didn't have that at this time, so it suffers. I did a Real History a couple of years ago with Mikhail, a Russian gentleman who's lived in Ireland for years and years, and he started a Telegram channel called mRNA Death Toll, and he was talking about, you know, how he studies algorithms and knows how to use them. And he had built that channel up to be over 30,000 subscribers. Now, he never opened it up for comment. He posted a lot of Alan's talks and other things too. And of course, it started, you know, during that operation of 2020. And naming the channel as he did, I'm sure, helped with his algorithms. Now, he had taken some time off, but I see that recently he's been posting again. And I love that because he posts Alan. So I think that for me, for now, keeping the chats closed down on Telegram on the CTTM channels is the best way to go, because I don't have that handful of full-time administrators. And also, it's just really not in line with what I want to do. I made a little graphic for the channel, just cutting through the matrix with Alan Watt. Because it comes down to, what did I learn from Alan, and what do I think is essential for me to share with you that I learned from him? And so I'll share this graphic with you, but it says, cutting through the matrix with Alan Watt. And then here is a quote from Cutting Through, Volume 1. The singularity known as the Creator is being diluted over time before our very eyes. And then I had a few little bullet point thoughts. Many years ago, I committed all the energy, love, intellect, and passion that is mine to use to one end, helping Alan. In the final episode of CTTM Book Club's Waiting for the Miracle, I said, as long as I'm in the room, I will bring to bear the benefit of my time with Alan and my knowledge of how his mind worked. Alan loved the Creator, the source of all, he said. And to me, he said, the source of all I am. Alan Watt was cutting through the matrix of non-reality, lies, and deception, a matrix built and maintained upon our ignorance of our true nature. A summary of the Cutting Through volumes might read, we are created by the Creator, and everything in this matrix has been designed by anti-creators to stop you from knowing this basic truth. What do I mean by, as long as I'm in the room, I will bring to bear the benefit of my time with Alan and my knowledge of how his mind worked? Well, God willing, when I'm gone, there will still be sentient humans who aren't brain-chipped, who can think, and they will be able to talk about Alan, and they'll read his work, because I'm doing my damnedest, because I'm doing my very best to make sure that it survives in many forms. But when I'm gone, you won't have the benefit of me being able to say, well, Alan thought this, and Alan said this to me. And so that's what I mean, as long as I'm in the room. And hey, I'm in the room right now with you. And those are the kinds of things that I want to share. I have a sense of urgency that I have had for going on 20 years. So Alan said, we want everything in a hurry. Quick, easy, spelled out. But you have to know yourself. The most important thing is that you know yourself. So he talked about the symbolism of a savior. And I'm going to repeat it. It's beautiful when he says it, but it bears repeating. It's the same thing, he said, Brahma, Messiah, Brahma, Messiah. It's the same thing, because they always meant the inner man. the inner man that has to go through stages, because inner man is all things. And you experience in all things, including all the mistakes that you make too, which are all learning experiences as long as you do learn from them. Many decide not to. Yet without knowing yourself, you will never understand anything else. You will not understand anything else, and neither is it necessary to become a judge on others who have been through what you have done in the past when you decided you'd no longer do it. So in other words, you know who you are, and you decide to be different from who you were in the past. But you don't have to judge others who are still doing what you've decided not to do. But here's the thing. There's a separation taking place. He ended this talk with a song by Leonard Cohen, By the River's Dark. And this is a beautiful song because it's so personal. It's so personal to Alan, and it's so personal to me. Because he has just told us in this talk that Babylon is a system. It's a system down through time. It's a system that moves through time, through history, through geography. There's always Babylon. And we all live in Babylon. And we drink from the dark waters of Babylon until we decide not to. And there's a couple of lines here that I want to share with you, because this is Alan. This is Alan. You're given, we are all given an opportunity or a series of opportunities to live our life differently, to come out of the beast system. And he said, then he struck my heart with a deadly force, and he said, this heart, it is not yours. When you are separated from the system, you can begin to live for something higher. And then there's a couple of phrases down. Though I take my song from a withered limb. Because how do our limbs get withered? By the corruption. By the corruption of our spirits that we do to ourselves by living in the system, by living in Babylon. So we can come out of that system, but trust me, we will be withered. Though I take my song from a withered limb, both song and tree, they sing for him. Be the truth unsaid and the blessing gone, if I forget my Babylon. So another way of saying that is, if you come out of the system and you forget who you were in that system, any truth or wisdom that you have to impart is gone. So separating from the mass is not a one-time thing. It's a constant vigil. All right. I've got a cat that wants to get on the lap and is saying, you know, I don't care if you're in Babylon or not. I want some attention. So tune in next week to Real History and you'll see the books. And I thank you all for your support. Take care.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. You can also find me at alanwattsentientsentinel.eu. It's July the 12th, 2007. Sometimes when you are a one-man band, you have to reflect back to where you plan to take things within your own life, which affects the lives of other people. And it's so easy today in this present phase of massive change, very quick progression along this pre-planned route, we call it civilization, towards the great society. Now it's called the global society. Many names down through the ages for the same thing. That rather than simply discuss the trivia that the media does out to us every day, so we all talk like little rats in a laboratory, wondering what the technicians will do to them when they come in to work in the morning. Will they inject us? Will they put electrodes in our brains and shock us? And all this kind of thing. That's all we're given, really, is it, from the media. It's stuff to occupy our minds so as we chatter. And when we chatter, we lose touch with our deeper selves, where your intuition lies, and where information of all kinds is stored deep, deep within the mind. The mind itself has barriers, and people in the past have tried to give words to these barriers to make it more understandable in conversation. So we have subconscious and we have unconscious and different stages between even those. The conscious mind, which is still a mystery to many of those who wish to control us, and that's the reason they're trying to bypass the usual techniques of simple indoctrination and repetition. They're trying to bypass it by literally taking over your mind directly via the coming brain chip technology, interfacing with a computer, the initial reason that they gave us the computer in the first place. We're being trained to go from one mousetrap to the next and to the next, very simply, in fact, as it appears to the public. However, much planning and discussion went into all of this technology long before the public heard the word computer. When they showed the public giant computers and governmental agencies with the big, big machines the size of Coca-Cola machines and tapes whirring round and round, that was to mislead you. Now, those folk who worked in those offices also thought they were using the latest technology, but technology always has different layers and levels into high secretive levels, ongoing in parallel, in tandem, side by side at the same time. The trick is to make you believe that you're being told all there is to know. In reality, you're being told all you need to know. That being decided by those that say that they are your betters. They gave us the computer I made sure that everyone knew from the very first computer sold to the public there would be porn on it, lots of pornography. That was the bait to get everyone into it, of all ages and genders. And it's worked very well. It was an imperative to get everyone hooked on it. Then to the iPod, then combination with iPod, cell phone, etc., right down to the next step, which is, you know what, it's a brain chip. Why bother having a cumbersome thing stuck to your ear when you can have a chip, an interface? It's so convenient. And through convenience, we shall give up our last vestige of our own ability to even be an individual. Most have really already given it up and didn't know it. Most people truly are composites of all their indoctrinations and downloading of opinions by experts and educational authorities. The same educational authorities that at one time would condemn you and ridicule you if you said the world was round. And we know, of course, they told people that the world was flat because it said so in the Bible, in the four corners of the world, etc., etc. And you couldn't contradict that, even though those same people in the Vatican had the archives of even the ancient Greek philosophers who discussed the fact that the world was round, and they got it from the Egyptians who also knew that. But yeah, they can tuck away reality and change it for one era to the next by hiding truth and giving out a new truth. That's what science does today. Science gives us new truths all the time, which means they're obviously contradicting their previous truths, and people can't quite catch on to that. And we know the world is round because NASA said so, and it's on television, you see pictures. It's terribly easy to control a world population by ensuring that all information is coming from the same source. And all you have to do is to employ thousands of people to write the same stuff and parrot the same stuff, from media to professors, all the way down. And there's no one to contradict them with a voice. To get a voice, you have to have money, big money. And those who give us our opinions, and talk about, above even the media, the ones who decide our opinions for us, create the money, the big con game. This morning, I was on an AM station in Montana called KGEZ, hosted by John Stokes, who runs the station. And we got talking about the global elite. I mentioned that there's always been a global elite down through the ages. This is not the first so-called civilization we live in today. You go back as far as money goes and you'll find the same hereditary families running different countries with their headquarters in different cities across the world at different times, because they built empires up and lived in them. When an empire had served its purpose, they would move on to somewhere else and another empire arose. Because you see, all armies that conquer anyone need money. And who runs the money but the same bankers? You'll find global bankers were working in the old world, in the ancient world, in the writings of the ancient Greeks. You'll find that some of the top philosophers like Aristotle, happened to be married to a daughter from one of them from the Middle East. There's nothing new under the sun, as they say, the only difference being we're at a stage of a global empire, the culmination of all these takeovers called empire building and takeovers of other countries and nations, the absorption, really, how they absorb countries into them down through the ages. Very often the same families would split and live in other countries, different countries from each other, and fund those countries as they had war with each other, because war is a method of necessitating the very existence of government. This is part of their ploy. And who owns a government but the same people? Because everyone runs on money in this system. Everyone, down through the ages. It's interesting just to look at ancient Babylon. And there are many levels of meaning to Babylon. It wasn't just a place, it was a system. And Babylon can move down through the ages. And what's important to know is that with the higher belief system that runs the occult societies at the top, the higher occult, not the nonsense that everyone at the bottom pay their way into and get a few passwords and they learn to sit in their backsides and meditate and all this stuff, or find their spirit guide or whatever. But the real stuff at the top, and those characters talk about circles. One of the most ancient symbols being the one of the serpent eating its tail. Again, many different levels of meaning, which I can't go into right here. But when the ancient Egyptian nobility wore the aureus, the serpent in front of their skull, their head, as a third eye almost. It was on a band around their head, the circle, representing the same thing of completion. It meant the universe was contained within the mind of the person who had been taught, who was wise as a serpent, and who also guarded his mind from extraneous nonsense. The extraneous nonsense was only for the public, because they would be given a different reality from those in the know. But circles are very important, since they studied the ancient stars, because the ancient brotherhood studied the movements of the moon, the sun, the stars, and they graphed it all, they drew it all out in charts. Circles are important. Not everything does travel in a complete circle, but circles are important to do with time. Getting back to Babylon, being a system, they say that everything starts with a point. To start a circle, a straight line, whatever, a journey. But we've completed a circle. It's interesting to see that Halliburton Corporation, the official, obviously, it's an official, authorized, massive planning corporation that deals with receiving the massive grants from the military-industrial complex to build things across the world, mainly through subcontractors. But they oversee it. We'll find certain members of the present Bush New American Century team were employees of the Halliburton Corporation. Surprise, surprise, eh? Ha, ha, ha. Like corruption is only at the street level. No, peanuts are at the street level. And that's the way it's always been. But we find Halliburton moving out of Texas and it's off to Bahrain, setting up there. We find the same thing with some of the big art foundations. The Louvre in Paris is making a duplicate, also in Bahrain, as they get closer and closer to their goal. And eventually, after this planned war or threat of war, which might come down to a compromise and then amalgamation and standardization into the system, whichever way it goes, Babylon will be restored as it was in the beginning, eh? The circle, the completion of a circle that took thousands of years to fulfill. That's why H.G. Wells could write in the Shape of Things to Come about the wars, the world wars, the three major ones, remembering that he was an officially authorized propagandist who was given facts and told to write stories around them by the British Crown and those around it. He talked about how the British troops would be in Basra, in Iraq, at the beginning of it. And that's exactly where they did go. The US went to the north. Britain headed and went around and maintained Basra. It would also be, in Shape of Things to Come, the base of the New World Order, where the scientists of the air, the Freemasonry of the air, the Great Brotherhood, Scientific Brotherhood as Wells called it, would be based. That's what history has always been about, the takeovers and takeovers, and the countries who are taken over one by one are standardized and brought under a monetary system, the same type of system. And you also find they're upgraded like a computer program at the same time. Even their languages are upgraded. Our lifespans being so short, it's tremendously easy to alter pretty well everything for a generation, especially when you separate those who had a bit of wisdom in the past, the elderly, when the elderly were respected and elevated for their wisdom and their knowledge. They could pass on information, which they did in the extended families, which was the norm. Very important function, because the parents were so busy to teach the children these kind of things. That had been destroyed. That was an imperative for an elite to do. They wrote about it. They had to destroy that. And they demonized the elderly. Now it's, you're geriatric if you get older. My goodness, you're a geriatric. You're obviously senile. You've got odd opinions. And you don't go along quietly. You might object about being put into, I call them exit homes or old age homes. You might object to being put there, and once you're there, you might object about being stuck in a chair all day with something in front of you that you can't get past. You'll be called agitated. Now, a younger person might be able to vocalize and be respected but an elderly person saying the same thing is automatically discounted because everyone's been indoctrinated that the elderly somehow don't know. They're not rational. They're simply not rational, you see. Indoctrination, mainly again through fiction and repetitive propaganda from media and science magazines and so on. So the wisdom isn't passed down to one, two, three generations as it used to be. Now it's terribly easy to allow the state to bring your child up, which it does, and which has been written about by those who planned the present system, at least that part of it, the educational system. They published their own books long ago on how they would scientifically indoctrinate the children so that if there was any parental input in the evenings, it would be cancelled out, like a firewall, you might say, by the child, by the child's conditioning. And that's happened. We also think in our short mortal lives that major changes, major planning is impossible. We think that if we manage to get a house and pay for it in a lifetime, we've done well. We're short-term planners because we don't have long-range plans personally. The elite who run the world do. And the information is all recorded, written down, and passed on to the next generation of the elite, who continue the big building projects of the builders, the real builders of society, the real masons, the structure of society, which we all take for granted as being normal because you're born into it. It must be normal. How else could it be? Never dawning on us that there are 1,000 directions that humanity could live in, and 1,000 different systems. Lenin said it, and all the big boys knew it, because they're all trained by the same teachers from the same archives of information. It's only the public that couldn't be allowed to know there are other ways of living. This buying, selling, producing and consuming thing is fairly recent. Yet we all think it's normal. We, like trained rats, we work and put up with jobs we wouldn't normally do if we had a choice. Only because we can reward ourselves with some toy or something, some pleasurable thing at the end of a month. Just simple reward, very Pavlovian, simple to do. And everyone's been trained that this is normal. Do any of you have the ability to say my great-great-grandchild will be running the bank of whatever it's called in 100, 200 years' time? No, it wouldn't even dawn on you. You'd be lucky to have your child resemble you in any way at all today, because they are scientifically indoctrinated through their education and through the media. And once again, modern books will tell you, oh, that's normal. It's normal that the child will go off in their own direction. Yet you go back before the industrial era, and for centuries people lived on the land. And each generation grew up singing the same songs that had been in existence for hundreds of years, liking them, enjoying them, identifying with them. They'd adopt the same clothing as their parents on the land. They didn't have a fashion industry then, at least in those countries in the West. Not for the ordinary people. A those who create the muses. That's why the muses are so important. Create the culture. They shape the culture, and culture is plastic. It can be shaped in any direction that the culture creationists decide it will be shaped into. It will be adopted by those who are downloaded with the marketing techniques that we're all exposed to. And ultimately, as I say, the lights go off one day in the mind as an artificial one takes over, and that will be the end of the ability to even think and work out the most profoundest problems the humanity has ever faced. That of existence itself, the worth of existence, the purpose of existence. You won't even have the ability to think it out at all. Most folk, as you notice, I'm sure around you, have already lost that ability. They give you cliché answers written by other people because it's too much of a chore to do the thinking themselves. Life is not a bowl of cherries. It was never intended to be. But certainly, in this artificial system that's been here and has spread out for thousands of years and taken over and taken over, there's nothing nice about it. There's no contentment and no lasting pleasure in it. Therefore, those who wish to stop time and just leave it as it is, with all of its corruption, all of its lying from the top, all of its manipulation, just stop it right now. Don't let it get worse. They think they can cope with that. Well, how could you cope forever holding up a tower that's held together with band-aids and glue and splints? You can't. Yet most people will think what I'm talking about is very foreign to them. They can't imagine a world where they couldn't go out and reward themselves with some thing that's been advertised on television or through magazines, because all the smiling faces tell you that that's what happiness is buying something, especially this item. I've never seen a glum face in an ad unless they've just bought brand X. But brand A is always wonderful. It's the ultimate experience, and it's going to make you tremendously happy. Yet we think this is normal, and people believe in it. They believe in this strange doublethink, that a thing, and an inanimate, inorganic thing, is going to make them happy. And in their pursuit of this deviant culture, they will destroy those around them to get those inorganic, dead things. They'd rather destroy people and each other than their ideas, the deviant ideas, which must be deleted like a virus in a computer if there's to be survival at all. You can't decide to fight something or save something unless you know what you're fighting to save. And if it's simply a time period of part of a plan that wasn't yours or your grandparents either, you can't save it. It belonged to the elite long ago. You can't save it. therefore the whole deck of cards comes crashing down. If there's some miracle and there's anyone who survives this with an intact sentient mind and memory, then they would know. They could never ever emulate or go back to this system again, because there's nothing humane in it. It's a cold-blooded system. It's one huge business that exploits everyone in it. It's a business which makes everyone in the business exploit someone else below. Until we have a whole bunch at the bottom that can't survive in it. And you're called useless eaters and wasters, because they can't produce and consume. Is that the function of life? Well, someone in this system high above has decided that that's what it is. And they also have been writing about it in their top economic books since the 1700s, that they wouldn't tolerate extra mouths, useless mouths to feed. Look at the mess society is in. Everyone is isolated from everyone else, except when they're drunk and in the flesh markets of nightclubs or wherever they go to. But when sober, they can't communicate. They act like robots towards each other, separated. They have a culture which promotes all kinds of deviances and crime. And when I say crime, I mean that which hurts other people around them. The elite like this because they can use that excuse to hire armies, basically, which they call police forces today, to control everyone else. That's the real reason they allow it to go on and encourage it, in fact. This merry-go-round of the legal business in society. They knew thousands of years ago you couldn't cram people into a city, an artificial structure where they can't produce or feed themselves, and expect sanity. You can't have it in a city. It's artificial. It's unnatural. Yet that's the very project which they planned to use for thousands of years to get us all into, ultimately. Now they call them habitat areas. All species, every species of animal will become deviant when you cram it into confined areas and the population meets a certain level. They turn on each other. That has always been known. So why are they doing it? Because their plan through science was always to dominate and conquer through science until they wouldn't need all of those people or their labor or their energy to bring about their ultimate goal, their plan to dominate a planet. They'll eradicate them eventually under the guise of there's too many of them. And it certainly will appear that way when they're all crowded into confined areas called habitat areas. The elite, of course, won't live in the same habitat areas. And there'll be exemptions too for the higher bureaucrats all serving the system. In fact, was done already on the Soviet model, basically the same system. It was done that way too in the Soviet regime, where the bureaucrats could have the use of dachshunds in the country and servants, where the peasant class were in the cities, overcrowded and decrepit, cheaply built buildings. Not much differently than the West. It's odd, isn't it, that they can always find trillions of dollars, or whatever currency, whatever con game they use in whatever country, they can find it in times of war, when right up to the war they're always broke and they can't put out money for the essential things for the people. Isn't that odd? It happens all the time. All the time. Down through history. And no one wonders why. It is often difficult for people to understand that an elite would appear to make the whole system completely dysfunctional if they wanted to conquer us all. They don't realize or understand the nature of generational and intergenerational and psychic or psychological and psyop operations. They certainly don't understand or know their histories of order out of chaos, the time between ages that is brought about to bring in a new system, because that's precisely what you do, is to break all bonds, to break the traditions that you're used to. That's why in all modern towns and cities, buildings don't last very long. At one time, you could grow up in a city and walk past the same buildings that your great-grandparents walked past when they were children. It gave a sense of continuity and belonging. When they can sever that continuity, they sever a hold that a reality has upon you. A natural phenomena has upon you. When they create a loss of roots and a lack of tradition, people become neurotic. The masses become neurotic, and that in turn will prepare them for collective hysteria. We already see this happening with all bizarre stories about the aliens are coming, and it's written in the stars. They bring back all the old stuff. In ancient times, it was a god's returning. And it was written in the stars. And it's all been recycled once more as the people are ready for it. It wouldn't have worked 100 years ago or 200 years ago. They have to prepare the minds and generations to accept it, and that creates the possibility to believe in it. And sure enough, those are sent out there to propagate this kind of stuff over again and mislead the people, and it works at the end of an age. So they become hysterical, really, in a collective hysteria. Really calls for collective therapies. That's why you have a massive business that's taken over from the old religions. This business is psychotherapy, psychiatry, yoga, a million meditation schools, all these band-aids to try and cope, and all these self-improvement things and coping with stress that they get taught in business now. They don't say let's decrease the stress. No, you're supposed to upgrade yourself to cope with more stress. All the while knowing at the top there's only so far you can go before you break. A collective therapy always takes away your rights. It abolishes rights and freedoms. That's always the therapy that's given when society becomes neurotic, neuroticized, and hysterical. With the abolition of liberty comes the terrorization of the public. That's what develops out of it. The modern society resembles a lunatic asylum, and it's going to get worse. What I'm saying here is known and has always been known in higher quarters. It's known by those who are bringing it about. If they decided to save their system for some strange reason, and it certainly would be strange if they did want to save it as it is, they'd revert you back to 1950s level of culture. A bit more feeling of stability and belonging. But they're going the whole way now. There's nothing new under the sun with the techniques that are being used. The only difference is being the immediate propaganda that comes into your habitat, your little room or your house every day by the media. Instantly. Whether it's men with spears and armor wearing the same colored cloaks that they wear on behalf of Caesar, or black military outfits with machine guns and some print on their sleeve, it makes no difference. It's all the same thing, same techniques. And the cry of terror, terror from the top down, and imminent gloom and doom from the top down, these have all been used before. And while all this chaos is going on, which they're creating to bring out a new order at the end of it, no matter how long it takes, you'll find the same bizarre manifestations amongst the public, where even your nearest friends will tell you that it's written in the stars. See, it's a law, or it's in this book, it's a Bible. A book they don't understand, because it's written in such a way that the exoteric is meant for the profane, those who do not understand, those in the darkness. The exoteric stories are written in such a way they captivate the mind. You picture the people that you imagine are being discussed. And they're written in such a wonderful way, great science, absolutely, to captivate you. But it's not meant to give you a truth unless you have the ability to see deeper. It's all predictive programming, whether it's written in a holy book or scientists are telling you it's the end of the world as you know it, or various card sharks come out and play their games with you, that it's fate. It's all pre-written. That's psychological warfare. Therefore, if you're not in control of yourself, since you're just an object of forces, then it's game over, and that's what you think, it's game over. I can't do a thing. You're beaten already before you start. All sciences which are understood at the top, all symptoms of the age which is promoted by the top. And by the top, I'm not talking about the guys you vote into office. To say that we simply have many families of power and influence running the world, and to say that they're just psychopathic is putting it mildly. There is also archives of material stretching back for thousands of years, which the regular public are never given access to, and they don't even know they exist, in fact. Everything that makes you who you think you are, including your language and the spell cast by spelling, is coded. That's how far and deep it goes, and much deeper. To program a computer, you must know its language, you must know its logic. In fact, you create the language to suit the logic, and you can also alter perception, in other words, in a human being, by the same process, by what you feed in and the language you use. Many things influence people on a subconscious level, because the subconscious is able to see beyond your regular organ feedback. And store that to the side. The conscious mind wants things in a hurry. They want everything, especially today, to be quick and easy and spelled right out for them. And it certainly is, in more ways than they know. In all ages, the symbols of saviors have been pretty well the same. The symbols of life itself, meaning more than just the physical realm, have been the same. And from the world tree, to the savior that's nailed on a tree, a savior who is both the horizontal and the vertical being that which climbs towards higher thoughts and spirit, you might say, and the vertical and the horizontal being the world of matter. The outstretchedness of all extremities means to the four corners of the globe. It's the same in all ancient religions and the symbologies in all times and ages and places. It doesn't matter if it's Brahma or a messiah. It's the same thing, because it always meant the inner man that has to go through stages, because the inner man is all things, and you're experiencing all things including all the mistakes that you make too, which are all learning experiences. As long as you do learn from them. Many decide not to. Yet without knowing yourself, you will never understand anything else. You will not understand anything else. And neither is it necessary to become a judge on others who are going through what you have done in the past and have decided you would no longer do. The original religions were given as a starting place. It's always the same starting place that's always immediately corrupted by the elite. In order to gain power and control, or retain power and control over the people. And towards the end of an age, the exoteric is concretized, and that's why it makes no sense to lots of people, except those who dogmatically cling to the exoteric, believing that somehow they're superior, really through fear, they cling to it. Anyone who truly needs to be told week after week of how to be good to other people has a problem if they need a book to read it from. It means they have not progressed themselves as individuals. Not because it's written somewhere. We're at a stage where people have to decide what life truly is about. We know what the elite have chosen, and we know what all their masses of bureaucracy has concluded, and that they have the right to plan our lives for us. They've decided what our purpose is or is not. And the servants have become the masters. The servants who become masters are always control freaks, dedicated to their positions and status, and what they see as a cause, their own cause. Collective cause, of course, because bureaucrats lose their individuality in their work. They become neuroticized and plan very crazy things, which they will speak about with straight faces to each other, and repeat their neologisms because they always dream up new terminology, like it were a new religion they were discussing amongst themselves for an elite. And no matter how preposterous their new ideas are, if anyone were to laugh, they'd be demoted or fired. It's insanity. Things are not meant to go on like this much longer. They're not planned to go on like this much longer. The mayhem that's predicted by the Department of Defense in Britain, and remember, that's only part of NATO. All NATO countries, this chaos that they see coming, because they're making it happen to a timetable. After all, it's one huge business in this world, and they must stick to their timetables. They're going to make it all happen. They have daily reports and all these different agencies and sub-agencies and specialized think tanks on the pulse of the people. They know what's happening at every level to the people. They get constant feedback and prepare always to maintain control over the people under every possible foreseeable circumstance. So we're well on our way to this crazy roller coaster ride towards the end of an age. And it truly is up to every person out there to start taking back the right to decide for themselves what life is all about, what it should be all about, and what it could be all about. Because it's never been discussed among society. All the big questions have always been answered by an elite, be it a priesthood or a scientific bureaucracy. Elites are always terrified of the masses. Paranoia is built into their structure. The reality they keep hyping about and the fear-mongering they're constantly causing is psychotic. And they intend to get the world's population into the same psychotic state and frame of mind if we allow it. There is so much to do and so little time. We better start all making ripples fast. Every single one of us, while we can. From myself and Hamish the dog, it's good night, and may your God or your gods go with you. Thank you.
waiting there was hunting me. By the river's dark, I panicked on. I belonged at last to Babylon. Then it struck my heart with a deadly force. And it said, this heart, it is not yours.
And he gave the wind my wedding ring, and he circled us with everything.
By the river's dark, my life in Babylon. Though I take my song from a withered limb, both song and tree, they sing for him. Be the truth unsaid and the blessing. Dark, we're alone.